Hello, and good evening, everyone. This is Matthew Fraley and Steve Nelson with BreakpointTrades.com. This is the weekend newsletter, and it's actually Monday, January 19th, instead of Sunday. Did you know the market was off Monday for Martin Luther King? And so we're doing the newsletter today. So hopefully everyone had a nice, long weekend and enjoyed some time away from the markets, and we always do. Steve Nelson was at a wedding this weekend, so he's been gone most of the weekend, and I've been pretty busy working on things in the website and everything else. So anyway, we got a lot to cover here, and I'm going to cover a few things at the top here, and then Steve will take over the market indexes, and then I'll take it over again for the commodities. I'm also going to discuss some mechanical trading system below. Anyway, just to recap, the first table above, you see the market again was nice down week last week. The only major sector I see up were biotechs, and the market sold off pretty much all week. It did bottom on Thursday. Thursday's low was actually almost exactly a 61.8% retracement from the November lows to the December highs. So we did bounce right where we had to, but Steve will, of course, discuss what we think could happen from now, from here on. And commodities were mostly down as well. News-wise, we've got quite a lot of news here, but obviously the inauguration is the big item this week. And we are in the heart of earnings season, and here is a list of some companies with earnings. So keep an eye on that, especially if you trade any individual stocks. And so next, I'm just going to discuss a few charts here, a few big picture charts, and then I'm going to hand it over to Steve. The first chart mainly is one I have in every weekend newsletter. It's just a very simple KISS moving average system. It involves a weekly chart of the S&P 500, a 13 and 34 exponential moving average, and just very awesome at defining bull and bear markets with simple crossovers. Using this system, you'd have been out of the last bear market in 2000. You'd have been in a whole bull market from 2003 to 2007, and you would have been out in January of 2008 and been out during this whole mess. And it's going to be quite a long time before those moving averages cross again. So long-term investors, before they put long-term money back in 401ks, they should wait for these moving averages to cross. Same with the second chart, just a S&P 500 monthly chart with a 20-month moving average. Works exactly the same way. You can see how far away we are from that 20-month moving average. It's going to be a long time before we cross that. And the last chart I'm going to discuss is just a big, it's an overview of the world indexes. It's the Dow Jones World Index. And again, it works in a very similar fashion. This one uses a 60-week moving average. You can see how nice that's worked. And, you know, pretty much the same thing, and it's going to be a long time before we cross that moving average. You know, all the world major markets are in major bear markets, as we know, as this financial crisis is worldwide. So anyway, I'm going to get over to Steve, and he's going to discuss the major indexes.
Thanks, Matt. And everybody bear with me. Needless to say, Matt said I was at a wedding, and a lot of yelling and screaming there, and my voice is a little raspy, so I'll do my best to go through things in a clear mechanism so you can hear it, and then we'll be on the blog the entire week answering any questions. For now, we have a couple of scenarios that may play out, and we've actually got scenario two listed above scenario one, simply because we believe that as a result of last week's sell-off during the early portion of the week and the fact that the major indices made new lows in terms of taking out their most recent lows, that a downtrend likely unfolded. We got a five-wave countdown, and thus at this stage we're going to put scenario two at the top of our list, but we'll certainly keep scenario one in mind. And in scenario two, we still talk about the third wave completing back here in November, a fourth wave a fourth wave bounce, and that would have been completed at that 944 area on our last run up, perhaps in a triangle. And then we are moving down currently in wave 5, and that will shift the primary wave A over from November to wherever wave 5 bottoms. So if we are in wave 5 down, we're looking for the near term, or excuse me, over the next several weeks to months, for us to take out those November lows and complete wave 5 to the downside, which will at that time then set in the bottom of primary wave A, and then we would have a deeper retracement back up. But we will retrace back up from lower levels. So as you know, we were targeting perhaps a 50% retracement back up. Well, if we're retracing from lower levels, our targets may be less on such a retracement. So we'll take it one day at a time, and we'll see how things unfold. But for now, scenario number 2 is at the top of our list and would call for a move down below the November lows and taking and putting us down perhaps in the low 600s on the S&P is a realistic target. But again, anything can happen. We could even perhaps have a truncated fifth wave, but with the nature of the first leg down on wave 5, and that's how we're going to label it at this stage, and that being 130 some points, I think the likelihood of us coming down and taking out those November lows is quite high. So it'll really depend here on this rally that occurred at the end of the week and how that plays out as to which one of these scenarios will take center stage. But for now, we're putting the scenario 2 at the top billing. Scenario 1 would have us kind of chopping around and not breaking down at this stage and perhaps rallying back up to take out our recent swing highs at 944 and probing a little higher up in the major indexes. Again, we'll just keep you updated. No reason to go into it any further at this time. Now, the daily chart shows what could be a descending triangle forming. Inside that descending triangle, we show that rising wedge that occurred on the November to January rally. As you all know, we broke down out of that rising wedge about 7 days ago or so, 7 trading days ago. And then we moved down and we tested that 61.8% retracement of our recent rally, where we did find buyers and rallied back up. Now the question is, are we going to move up and set a lower high as shown in the red and then turn down sharply? Or are we going to somehow extend this rally up without coming down and taking out those November lows? I'll pose 2 scenarios more specifically below, but that's really what we're looking at here in the near term, is some type of reflex rally, which began on Thursday and Friday, perhaps ended at Friday's high, but truthfully, we'd like to see a little higher probing, and then it's sharp move down. The one thing to pay attention to would be Friday's low as a warning sign. A break below Friday's low would be a warning. And then, of course, a move below last Thursday's low and a close below there would certainly open up the door for the next leg to the downside. On the other hand, a move back above the 900 area, which is the downtrend line of this descending triangle, would be encouraging, and then a move back above the 920 area would really be encouraging that we're going to move up and at least test the previous 944 highs. And in between 900 and 815 is kind of no man's land, and I'd say towards the upper part of the 800s, if things begin to look toppy, would be an objective short area. whereas a decisive break below 815 would also be an objective short. Should we come down and successively retest and put in a higher low than the 815 area, 817 area, and then turn back up, I think that'll provide at least a trading long. Now, let's move on and look at these scenarios, our two scenarios, in a little more detail. The first scenario is something we've been showing for seemingly over 2 months now, and that is we're either in a wave four triangle, which would have us rallying up a little more to complete E, or wave four completed at our recent highs at 944. Under that scenario, our move down from 944 down to the 815, 817 area was wave one, and then now we're bouncing up in wave two, with the most devastating leg down in wave three to follow. Otherwise, we're moving up in wave E, and we will kick off wave five to the downside with wave one. The key thing under this scenario is for it to remain valid, we must not go above the 944 pivot, and should we turn down sharply out of either of these scenarios where C was or E is, they're all going to end up in the same place with new lows in major wave five. So it's really not important what the near-term count is. It's the end result that's important, and that is new lows, taking out those November lows in wave five. Now let's move on and look at the daily charts. Our daily charts of all the major indexes, as we've talked about, have done a corrective type action and have, as a result of this corrective action, have allowed the Bollinger Bands to tighten. We call them pinch together. I talked about last week the inability of these indexes to break out of the top side of these bands, and then they move to the downside. Okay? Now, I did talk last week that the likelihood now was that they would break out to the downside. At that time, the lower Bollinger Band hadn't started opening up. It is starting to on the Dow and the S&P, where the lower Bollinger Band is slightly descending down. That's an indication that it is beginning to weaken there, but yet we have yet to decisively break down out of these pinching patterns. So we'll watch. It hasn't been set in stone, and perhaps they'll save it and rally it back up. But for now, we have to give the onus to the, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the bears, and thus the onus is back on the bulls to rally this back up. And as you know, we do have a lower low now in place. The question is, on this rally, will we have a lower high in place? And then if we do get a lower high in place, will we get another impulse move to the downside? Our count suggests that if we do get a lower high in place, we're likely to get another fairly decent move to the downside, as I talked about. Now, the other scenario is shown next, and this is something we've shown for many weeks as well, and that is that our major wave A completed here in purple back in November, and then we've done a zigzag ABC, ABC up to complete the red A, and we are currently correcting down in wave B. Okay? Now, there's two scenarios for wave B, one of which was that wave B completed at our lows on Thursday morning, and now we're going to continually rally up in wave C. Or a second scenario would be that instead of where wave B was at 817, we're going to do an ABC down for B. So the move from 944 down to 817 would have been A in blue, parentheses. Then we're going up now in B, parentheses, will come down in C parentheses without taking out our previous lows in November, and that'll mark the end of wave B. Now, the things that support the wave B scenario, are the fact that the monthly stochastics are down at oversold levels. They have yet to give any type of decisive buy signal, but the weekly are also down at fairly low levels, and I'm talking about the weekly stochastics, they remain on buy signals. And while it's true we did come down fairly sharply here in a five-wave pattern, our daily stochastics have now reset. They are at oversold levels, and as of Friday, I noticed this over the weekend, our daily major indexes, stochastics, are back on buy signals. While only slightly, they are back on buy signals. So again, the onus is on the bulls, and we want to see if they can begin moving up sharply or perhaps enough to give us hope that even the ABC alternative scenario is playing out. So again, all of these moves up and down, we want to measure on the nature of the moves. Are they impulsing in five-wave structures, or are they moving in three-wave structures? Five-wave structures are indicative of impulsive moves, whereas three-wave moves are indicative of corrective moves. And we did have a five-wave move down from 944 to 817, another reason why we're keeping that scenario 2 above in the top slot. Now, let's move on to the S&P itself and look at the weeklies down to the 50 intraday time frames. I talked about this chart on Wednesday night, and I talked about the fact that the weekly charts found resistance at that 13-week moving average, turned down, and of course, we did end up this week with another down week off of our lows. And I talked about one thing we need to watch, and that was the MACD histogram, which at the time on Wednesday was showing a lower bar. Well, it ended up showing basically an equal bar. Still not great, but not very determinate as well. So here again, we see the MACD is still on a buy signal, while only slight. And our stochastics are on a buy signal. Should we get another lower bar in place, we'll have a topping pattern there exhibited on the histogram, and then that's going to likely lead to a negative MACD crossover over time, and that'll pull the stochastics onto a sell signal on the weekly time frame. We've yet to get a buy signal on the weekly tricks. So we'll continue to watch this as the days go by and see if it provides any indication to which one of those scenarios is likely to unfold. Now, the next chart shows the Fibonacci levels that I was talking about above, and that is the 818 area. We bounced, we undercut it slightly, but I talked about horizontal support there around that 815 area and then the 61.8% Fibonacci area, and we did get a nice reaction off of there. Of course, we were greatly oversold in the near term, and we got a nice southern doji. Southern doji would be where we have a close in between the high and the low, but closer to the upper portion. And then we followed up with another doji. And this by itself in a candlestick pattern is not bearish. So those two daily candlesticks are still indicative that we may have some more upside. But of course, those can be negated by a engulfing bearish pattern. So we'll see. Again, though, you can see our stochastics here on the daily now are back below 20, and they are on an ever so slightly buy signal with the fast line crossing our signal line just barely. We'd like to see that move up above 20 with a little more vigor to give us more confidence that this rally is going to continue. And we hope that that will happen, and I'll point out some resistance areas. Now, the next chart is our 5-3 stochastics chart that's done a good job of helping us with small swings. You can see back here in December, we got a buy signal, ran up. We talked about the sell signal. Now we came back down and we crossed back up positively. And needless to say, we did get a nice bounce there in the S&P. Now it remains to be seen if this is going to be a muted bounce where the stochastics don't make it all the way back up on this chart over 80. It fails and then turns down similar to what I circled back in November, or are we going to get another large move back up like occurred in late December? We shall see. Now, should there be any type of bullish hope out there, it would maybe be from the next chart, and that is that we still have these declining necklines in place, and we have potential inverse head and shoulder pattern setups here on these indexes, the S&P, Dow, and the Qs. You can see that the left shoulder would be there in October and November, the head being the November lows, and a right shoulder being formed here recently. And maybe it chops around and plays out for a while, and we develop a complex right shoulder like we see on these charts with complex left shoulders. And what I mean by complex left shoulders is we have more than one left shoulder. We have two left shoulders. So the key thing here would be holding above Thursday's lows on all these indexes. If we break below there, it would most likely invalidate these patterns. And then, of course, a confirmation would only come breaking back decisively above the necklines. And the necklines are the slanted blue lines. Again, I think this is just a hype we're painting out for the bullish case, which at this time we view as having less chances of unfolding. So a low. Now let's go down and look at the 60. We have a couple of 60-minute charts. And on this 60-minute chart, the first one, I talk about wave four being put into place. And our initial leg down to last Thursday's low, I've labeled in blue as one of five. So this would be wave one down of the larger wave five in green. And we are currently under this count in wave two up. So it's not surprising to see wave two is retraced 61.8% or even higher than wave ones. So back up the 870 to 920 area before turning back down. I do mention in my annotated comments that we have a small gap around the 871, 872 area, which may prices may want to fill. So let's keep an eye on that. And then if you look up a little higher, we do have at least another gap higher. I think there's actually two gaps up there. It's more clear on the Qs, but we will keep you posted. And I do have some Fibonacci retracement targets below on the 15-minute chart. Now, let's move on and look at another view of the S&P on a 60-minute time frame with a different indicator, and that is the VIX. If you look at the VIX 60-minute chart or the VIX 60-minute indicator below the price chart, you can see that when we broke that downtrend line, or excuse me, when we broke the uptrend line on the VIX way back here in December, we started to rally nicely. Then the VIX slowly moved down, and then it broke above its downtrend line there in early January, around January 7th, and that started our descent down. And Matt has labeled this as a five-wave decline, which I agree with. And now we're currently back testing this trend line here on the VIX 60-minute. So for the bullish scenario, or at least for hopes of this rally extending, we want to see this trend line here break to the downside and hold. Okay, and that should correspond to another move up, another leg up in the S&P. Just breaking this trend line in the VIX doesn't guarantee we're going to go up and take out our recent highs, but it'll suggest to us that this rally that began on Thursday of last week has some more upside to it versus bouncing off of it very sharply. That could be a sign that we're already ready to start turning down once again. And again, a break below that 817, 815 area would be a another reason to become extremely cautious, because that has been a critical support area. And when you're looking at the daily charts, you'll see that there is really very little support between the 815 area and those lows back in November. Now, let's move on and look at the 15-minute chart of the S&P. And here I have specifically pointed out the gap resistance. It's shown in pink around the 871, 872 area here. And that area is an initial resistance area, and it falls just above the 38%. So we've got resistance around 866, then that gap area, then we've got our 50% and 61.8% retracements. So those are some Fibonacci retracement areas to make note of. You can see on the 15-minute time frame on Friday, the regular stochastics powered up to over 80 and are now looking like they want to turn down. We were unable to come back up and take out our highs from January 15th on Thursday. We got up to 855, whereas our high on Thursday was 858. So it looks a little precarious entering into Monday, and the futures are reflecting that with the S&P down over 12 points currently. So we'll see if they buy them up on an early dip next week or if we're already poised to roll over. Now let's move on and look at the Qs. We like to look at some of the tech indices as well. The Qs on the weekly time frame also show a struggle at the 13-week exponential moving average. You can see the rally took us back up to that area. We poked our head above it, but we're unable to close above it on a weekly time frame, and we've since turned down, not dramatically so far, and we still are on a buy signal on our MACD and our stochastics, but we really need to see this get back and above that 13-week moving average for us to hope that this rally is going to extend in the queues. As you can see, the volume patterns here are not encouraging as well. We came down on heavy volume, we rallied up on declining volume, and then our past 2 weeks we've showed distributory volume as well. However, we still have yet to completely break down, as you will see below. Now, the daily charts of the Qs show that we did break down out of this rising wedge. You could draw it two different ways. Either way you draw it, we have broken those two lower trend lines, and then we spent the end of last week rallying back up slightly to back test one of the trend lines, with the other trend line being higher. I also want to point out that we are below the 20-day moving average on the Qs and just slightly above the 50-day. On the S&P above, we're still below the 50 and the 20-day moving average. So we really need to see this turn up and continue to gain some upside momentum. The hope being that we held above our rising trend line on the RSI and the MACD that I show on the chart, and now the fact that the stochastics are down to oversold levels and back on a buy signal as of Friday. So we will let the market determine things, and we'll point out the critical levels again before I wrap up. Now, the NASDAQ composite, I just have one chart of the NASDAQ composite here, and that's a daily chart. And here again, you can see where the stochastics gave us a sell signal, turned down from above 80 and are now back to oversold levels. It too is rallying back up just underneath the 50-day moving average. So the broader NASDAQ index is lagging the Qs somewhat, but it also has resistance above at the 20-day moving average and our previous lower boundary of our rising wedge. So really, it's going to need to pick up speed and get back into that wedge to give us hope that we're going to have a chance at retesting our recent highs. Now, let's go on and look at the intraday charts on the Qs. The 60-minute chart of the Qs, what I've done is I want you to pay attention to the blue trend lines. Okay, so we've got a channel now in place. Off of the two December lows, we managed to bounce off of that last week, and we're moving back up. One potential scenario here is that we rally up a little higher, and we set a right shoulder in a bearish head and shoulders topping pattern, with our head being there at 3163, our complex left shoulder over here, and then we would be in the process of setting up a right shoulder. The neckline is slanted down somewhat, but a break below, let's say, the 28 area would serve as confirmation over time that this is a bearish head and shoulders pattern playing out. So pay attention to that. Even if we don't rally up and get up here and carve out a nice symmetrical right shoulder, a break below this 28 area would still most likely usher in a great deal more selling. So that's an area to make note of if you trade the Qs. The 15-minute Qs showed our declining channel of our five-wave move down. We were unable to break out of this channel until Thursday. We finally developed some positive divergence on the MACD, which allowed us to gain the momentum we needed to break out of the channel. We ran up there. We came and did a successful back test of the upper boundary of the channel and then ran up once again on Friday. But as you can see, near Friday's highs, we had some negative divergence perhaps forming on our MACD histogram, RSI, and MACD. So, you know, it was starting to lose some of its upside momentum. That can be negated by turning back up and breaking above the 2960 area with force, but it was a reason for being somewhat cautious near the end of the day, in particular with our regular stochastics now overbought and pointing down on the 15-minute time frame. Now, let's move on and look at quickly our indicators, and we've talked about these. Back on the 7th of January, I talked about this indicator being at extremely overbought levels, and that was the regarding the S&P percentage of stocks above their 50-day moving average. Back on that day, we were above the 80% area, which has always coincided with some major tops. Will it or will it not be this time? It's hard to say, but it was a warning sign that at least in the near term we were overbought and we were looking for some type of reprieve. As you can see, that has fallen sharply, as has the indices since that time. The next chart is a chart of the bullish percent index of the NASDAQ composite. This too is rolling over. We don't show the BPNYSE, which I've already talked about a couple of times last week. Both of these are on a point and figure sell signal as they've moved down 6 points off their recent highs. And as you can see, this is now closed below its exponential 9-period moving average as well. The key thing to point out here for another thing to watch going forward would be the rising trend line on the PPO, which is very similar to the MACD, and to see if we get a bounce off of that particular trend line on that indicator, or we're going to slice through it. We need to see breadth improve, which is measured on the bullish percents, for us to have any type of sustainable rally. The next chart is that of the New York Stock Exchange Summation Index. This has still yet to give us a PSAR sell, but as you can see, it's hooking down. And I talked about this last week as something to watch. We did have some slight negative divergence on the MACD histogram. So we'll be watching to see if we get a confirmed sell signal in the New York Stock Exchange Summation Index. We do, as you can see on the next chart, have a PSAR sell on the NASI, which is the NASDAQ Summation Index, as of Friday. Now, the question is, is this going to just be a simple temporary sell on a pullback and then we're going to rally back up? Or is it going to be the start of the next major trend down? That's impossible to say at this stage, but with the MACD at very elevated levels turning down and giving us a slight bearish cross, the fear is that we could be entering the next significant down leg. So we'll have to keep an eye on this day after day to see if we continue to see the PSAR sell signal remain intact and our MACD begin to move down away from its signal line in a more decisive manner. Now let's move on and look at a couple of the indexes. I talked about the bank index being a problematic index last week. And on the 12th, I know the BKX was up in the mid to upper 30s, and I talked about it targeting down around 30 at least. And sure as heck, the BKX did make it down to 30.20 late last week as the banks continue to struggle to make any type of upside progress and are leading this market back down. Truthfully, I can't see any type of sustained rally taking place without the financials at least stabilizing. You know, at a minimum, they need to stabilize and go horizontal for us to have a rally. And really, to have a sustainable rally, they're going to have to participate somewhat. They don't necessarily have to lead for us to have a rally, but they have to participate. And right now, they're showing no signs of that as all their indicators are pointing down. Yes, the stochastics are oversold. The RSI is oversold. But so far, we see no price action that is indicating a reversal is at hand, at least as of Friday. The next chart's just another view of the BKX. Here again, I think a good indicator is to watch to see if the BKX would turn up and begin outperforming the S&P. That's shown as the indicator above here on the ratio chart, above the price chart on the white BKX chart. So you can see that that is turning down sharply away from that trend line. And again, just clearly showing the banks have once again led the move to the downside. Let me get a drink here. Okay, the next chart is that of the XLF. Here again, you can see how it broke down out of the symmetrical triangle. I talked about it on the 60-minute chart, which is shown below. And we did move down sharply. And here, just like the banks, we showed distributory volume with our indicators continually pointing to the downside. The next chart is that 60-minute chart that I showed last week of the XLF. I stated that this was set up in a bearish pattern on the weekend newsletter last week, and a break below 11.45 was an objective short, and I thought that it would ultimately target at least this gap that developed back in November. And that played out very nicely as the XLF moved down sharply, filling that gap and providing a beautiful swing trade to those who took that short at 11.45. A $2.20 move on an $11 position is a great percentage return within 5 days. Now, there is some hope here on the 60-minute time frame of a potential bounce as we have positive divergence on three of our indicators, the RSI, the MACD histogram, and the stochastics, but we don't see that yet on the regular MACD. So perhaps some type of muted bounce, But we'll see how things play out. Next support is all the way down at our November lows. And by the way, looking at the bank index above, you can see that that has already taken out the November lows. So the banks themselves in that index are faring worse than the broader financial sector and leading us to the downside. And now let's move on and look at the VIX. And this is the last chart I'll talk about tonight. And you can see that we talked about the VIX pulling back and perhaps back testing previous resistance, turn support around that 35-37 area, which happened to correspond to the 200-day moving average. We got a nice bounce off of there, indicative of the S&P pulling back. And then on Thursday, you can see on the daily time frame, the VIX came up and tagged its 50-day moving average and put in a bearish shooting star pattern and reversed down. And that was confirmed with an engulfing bar on Friday. So now we see that the full stochastics are overbought and on a sell signal, but yet we have some conflicting indicators here because we have MACD still on a solid buy signal, and we're seeing the tricks turn up here, and it's giving us a slight buy signal as of the end of last week. So the VIX has some muddled signals on the indicators, so we'll have to see how things play out. But overall, the fact that it did respond to support down around the 35-37 area is a warning sign that it may be beginning another uptrend. So we'll have to see how this slight pullback that occurred at the end of last week plays out. And should it turn back up robustly, then the markets are likely to break to the downside. That's all I have to say. Again, I apologize for the raspy voice. I will say this, because I promised earlier, I will point out the key areas to watch for support on the S&P are Friday's low initially, which is around 8:30, and then, of course, Thursday's lows, which correspond to the previous lows around that 8:15, 8:17 area. Should those be decisively broken to the downside, then it's highly likely we've begun the next leg to the downside. Then the question is it going to be another very strong impulsive leg down, wave three, or is it going to be something along the lines of a wave C correction in our bullish case? For now, we're going to give more credence to the fact that it's more likely to be a wave three, simply because our first leg down off of those 944 highs was a five-wave impulse move. So those are the support areas to make note of. The resistance areas, as I talk about on the 15-minute chart above, are those Fibonacci retracement areas, and then that gap around the 870, 71 area, 72 area. And then above that, we have further resistance all the way up towards the 920 area. It's going to take a move above 900 and then 920 to really give us hope that this uptrend that began in November is going to make another leg up. That's all I have to say. I'll turn it back over to Matt.
All right. Thanks, Steve. And those of you new to the site, remember you can pause these or pause them and listen to them later. So the newsletter is about 42 minutes long currently, so I'm going to try to head and get through the rest of my charts here fairly quickly. Anyway, I'm going to cover the commodities here and just a couple quick mechanical systems. Not really the commodities and most commodity stocks are really moving with the general market. And so pretty much of the Elliott wave analysis that applies to the general market also applies to commodities. The first chart here below this table, you can see it's an overlay of the S&P 500 and the commodities ETF. You can see how closely they've been trading together. It shows you, again, commodities are following stocks. And it also shows you that we are seeing deflation. We continue to see deflation, and that happens in deflationary times. I explained that in a previous newsletter. Anyway, the next two charts are daily charts of the CRB And, you know, the CRB made a low in December here, and the moving averages are starting to pinch together, the 20 and 50 day. So the question is it going to bottom here and then rally up, or does it have another pullback? And the second chart is two possible scenarios, one where the CRB commodities bottom here and then start to rally up. You can see the green line, or they have one more decline and a fifth wave move down to make another bottom. And that would be basically following the scenario listed above in the general indexes. It's really hard to say here, but I think the commodities are going to follow the general market pretty much. And also that'll, whatever the U.S. dollar does in the short term will have some effect on this. And I'll explain that below. Crude oil broke a downtrend line in late December, rallied up, got near the 50-day moving average, which was major resistance. It pulled back, found support on the broken downtrend line, and it's just been consolidating here. And, you know, does it have some more to pull back, or is it going to start to move up here? It's hard to say, but the next chart is a shorter-term chart of crude oil. And crude oil could possibly be in an inverse head and shoulder pattern. You can see I have these pattern labeled here. But in order for this pattern to play out, you wouldn't want to see crude oil really fall below 40 because it would make the pattern unsymmetrical. So it really needs to start going here. And currently, crude oil is down tonight. But again, it would need to start turning up and it would need to take out the neckline, which equates to about the 50-day moving average. But again, that's just a hypothetical pattern. Hard to say if it plays out. But if it does play out, possible targets to the upside would be the 60 area and maybe a little above that. The 62 area is, by the way, it would be a 62% retracement of the, actually be a 38% retracement from the July highs to the recent lows. The DXO is an ultra-long crude oil ETF, and if crude oil were to move up, resistance would be the downtrend line. But the pattern does look kind of weak here, and I have some support here. If that were lost, crude oil sells off, then this will sell off too. Crude oil has to turn up, start to break the neckline, and DXO would have to turn up and break this trend line for this pattern to even play out. Gasoline, looks like gasoline probably go higher. It looks like a little inverse head and shoulder. Not that we trade gasoline, just showing this because actually I had a couple questions on gasoline for some reason from a couple members. Next chart's CRX, and CRX is General Commodity Stock Index. Looks pretty much like the general indexes. Again, as I stated above, commodities and commodity stocks are trading together along with the general market. Broke a rising wedge at the downside, having a weak oversold bounce here. Overall, the pattern is bearish. And the next two charts are ETFs of the energy stock, energy stocks themselves, oil and energy stocks, XLE and DIG. And they're both in these bottoming triangle patterns, but respect the direction that they break. And if they break to the downside, new lows are coming. If they consolidate around a little bit longer and break resistance, then they have a chance to rally. They can go either way here. And the next chart's a 30-minute chart of DIG. I'm going to go ahead and skip over that. The next chart's a daily chart of UNG, natural gas ETF. I had some questions on this over the weekend. So UNG, natural gas, continues to just trend lower and lower over time. And it's now back to the bottom of the downtrend channel. That's really all there is to say about it. Maybe it bounces off the channel here. I really don't have any interest in playing it. Steve doesn't either. UNG doesn't trade very well. I've never had a lot of luck trading it, but that's the analysis for it. Moving on, the U.S. dollar. U.S. dollar has moved up strongly since the December lows, which, by the way, was a 61.8% retracement from the November high. And again, the dollar continues to strengthen despite all the money that they're, you know, the printing press is running over time. The Fed, you know, is printing all this money. Doesn't seem to affect the dollar. And why? Because we have deflationary forces currently winning out. Now, eventually, maybe the printing presses will win. We'll have hyperinflation in the future. but you know that takes time, and currently deflationary forces are in control. The dollar looks still, to me, it looks like it could be in a bear flag here. It is a strong pattern. It is strong, but you know if it breaks the uptrend line, that would be the thing to watch this week. If it breaks that uptrend line, that might give commodities a boost as well as the general market. So I think that is one thing to watch. But if the dollar continues to run up here, then I think that'll be bad for the commodities, but also the general market. So keep an eye on that dollar this week. The next chart's daily chart of gold. I actually got a duplicate chart of gold here. I'm going to delete one of them out. You won't see it, but gold pulled back nicely from this bearish rising wedge pattern I had drawn in late December and early January. Stopped at the downtrend line resistance as well from July. And it's pulled back quite nicely. Last week it had a big pullback, and then it rallied on Friday quite nicely. Hit a low of 815 for the week. And the anyway, gold basically stopped. It found support at the 50-day moving average and also the 38% retracement from the December highs. You could also draw a little uptrend line here. So if the dollar were to start breaking down, gold would probably have some more upside. Stochastics are oversold and turning up. And so that's what to watch. Now, if the dollar, if gold turns down here and breaks this uptrend line into 50-day moving average, then I think it's really going to pull back hard. So that's pretty much the key. Now, if it rallies, again, major resistance above is that first downtrend line and then 900. Lots and lots of resistance above. And again, I think the dollar holds a key for it. So next, gold stocks, GDX, pretty much the same analysis. It pulled back last week, found support to 50-day moving average, bounced to 38% retracement. You know, does it have one more rally left in it or not? Maybe if it does, maybe it might go to the 200-day moving average. But it needs to hold this 50-day moving average in an uptrend line. Stochastics are overbought, which is good, though the 60-period stochastics are under 80%, which is a warning sign. So, again, so keep an eye on that dollar. But if you are in GDX, make sure to have a stop below that uptrend line. And the next chart is a 60-minute chart of GDX. It shows you the short-term gap resistance there. And the 15-minute chart of the GDX, you can see there's some negative divergence on it. And lastly, I want to go over, I had a couple guys in the blog wanted me to look for a mechanical system for trading GDX. I did a bunch of back testing scans on GDX. It took half the day. And I came up with one that was quite interesting. It involves a 15-minute chart. It involves basically a moving average crossover system. It involves two moving averages. It involves a 24 exponential moving average and a 36 weighted moving average. Now, the weighted moving average might be tricky to many of you folks. The weighted moving average is not available on stock charts. Stock charts only have simple and exponential moving averages. However, most charting programs have weighted moving averages. Most brokerages do. Most professional charting systems do. So, you know, you're up to your own. It's up to you to find a charting program that has it. But most do. And these are the parameters. Now, this system, unlike many of them that we've presented, is you do not exit end of day. You hold overnight until the next moving average crossover, which could be a day from, you know, the next day. It could be 5 days. But anyway, going back to January 1st, 2008, the system would have returned based on $100,000 in a trading account. And for each trade, it would have returned about 233%. The system is only 49% profitable. It means only, you know, one out of every two trades are losers. However, you know, overall the system is a winner because the average winning trade is more than double the average losing trade. And so that's a mechanical system for you if you'd like to try it. And the next chart gives you the monthly breakdown of the system returns. Again, it's based on a $100,000 account. $100,000 would be invested in each trade. The extra amount made is not added. It's just the same $100,000 for each trade. Though, you know, with margin, you can, you know, you could do this with $50,000 or $25,000, 4-to-1, whatever. But the monthly results, you can see you had one losing month in May. But based on $100,000, the average return, monthly return, is about 17%. And the next chart, it gives you a chart, is an example of GDX with the moving averages from my system. And you can see the some of the buy and sell signals based on those moving averages recently. There was actually a short signal here you could see on Friday, late midday. And lastly is one more mechanical moving average system that is a swing trading system. Again, this is involving crude oil, which it's based on the 15-minute chart of DTO, which is the ultra short crude oil ETF. And this system involves, this is a little simpler than the GDX because it involves a 15 and 84 simple moving average. Trades are not exited end of day. They are held to the next moving average crossover or until a profit target is hit. Trades can sometimes are held 7 days and as much as 20 days. In this chart, you can see an example of some of the recent buy and sell signals. This system would have returned 214% from July. And the one caveat, though, here is that the system results were greatly improved by having a profit target of 34%. So if you, either on your long or short, if you had a 34% gain, you would exit the trade regardless if the moving averages would have crossed over. So you can actually see a recent example here. On Thursday, you could see it shows it exited a trade, but the moving averages did not cross. So that a 34% gain was achieved there, so it exited. Without the 34% parameter in here, the gains are only 144%. So it makes quite a bit of difference. And anyway, so this is another system. Now, sometimes you can't short DTO, so you could always go long USO. That does it, folks. This newsletter is quite long. It's got about 55 minutes. So let's see what happens this week. And we have 4 days this week, shortened holiday. On the commodity end, watch for the U.S. dollar. See if it continues to rally up or if it starts to pull back here. And I think that'll affect commodities, not only commodities, but also general stocks as well. So that does it. We'll see you tomorrow and the rest of the week in the blog. Thank you.